Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. And I do have a co-host or guest as well. This time it's not going to be a solo show, but have we discussed and gone through and scheduled and scripted out what we're going to say? No, because Mr. Stephen Harris joined me 4 seconds ago. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good evening, Paul, and good evening to your viewers. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM. And yeah, a little bit late, but as the Eric Carmen song goes, I didn't want to leave you all by yourself, mate. So I'm here.
No, thank you. It's good to get the sound check in as well. Just there we go. So yeah, we can hear Steve, which is great. All the tech luckily works first time every time. Anyway, folks, boy oh boy, we have a weekend of rugby to talk about. But we will go back further than that because we also have got the Maori All Blacks game to talk about. The Pacific Nations Cup wrapped up. Obviously, we had the All Blacks versus Ireland and the aftermath of that, which is rumbling on. And we'll go on for some time to come as well. And as Time to Fly says, no man should cry alone. Very, very true.
True. That is gold. We're off to a good start.
We'll also obviously touch on the final, the deciding test for the Australia England, Springboks versus Wales, and Argentina versus Scotland games as well. So plenty of stuff to talk about this coming weekend. Stephen, what was your weekend of rugby like? Did you get out about and catch some rugby?
Yes, I did, Paul. Headed off, as you know, I cover the club rugby scene and mostly the Auckland area, but also the Blues area as well. Of course, last weekend headed up to Whangarei to take in the Northland club final. And I got to say that was pretty one-sided, but weekend just gone. I headed across to watch the North Harbour club final between North Shore and Takapuna, who'd been unbeaten all season. Of course, the 2021 winners were North Shore, who basically pipped Takapuna right at the post last year, scoring a last-minute converted try. But this year it would be Takapuna who got the revenge and took out the victory by 29 points to 19. And what I've got to say was a really, really high-quality, exciting, tense final. And the most enjoyable thing about it was the two sets of supporters. The game, so many swings and roundabouts, and of course each set of supporters letting the other lot know who was in control of the game. And of course not till the closing minutes did Takapuna, based on the Shore, took home the victory. Now, from what I believe was their first victory in 12 years. They'd been in a couple of finals in recent times, but hadn't been able to get across the line.
Now, and so great to get out to Club Rugby. It was also finals weekend down here in Thames Valley, but I didn't get to go along, so my daughter's with me. But I will be catching some rugby this coming weekend. But we'll talk about all of that later. Don't forget, folks, you can always join us at 8 p.m. on Monday evenings for the Driving More show. It's live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or you can listen to the podcast to search for New Zealand Sports Radio. And you know what? They do say that people like bad news, and bad news is bringing them all in. We've got Boa as well. How are you doing, sir?
Bad news sells newspapers. Since the day of newspapers being invented and printing presses, yeah. Well, there is a bit of a silver lining, which we'll talk about, but good news and bad news. The bad news is, of course, we don't need to go over it. The good news is I did tip that Wellington is a graveyard for the All Blacks. And guess what? Statsman strikes again. And hopefully, I know one person who took the juicy odds, and he's smiling ear to ear. And I have to say, on this has been one of the rare occasions I've gone against the All Blacks, and I'm not too happy. I'm not too unhappy about the result.
Yeah, and as the reviewer said, it took a while for rugby at international level to get this unpredictable. Well, yes, well, it was. Whilst Boa picked that one, there were a lot of 50-50 games that also that were on this weekend that came that were there. So yes, it has been a cracking week or cracking set of series of rugby. And as has somebody has pointed out already, what is World Rugby trying to do? Well, they're trying to get rid of international tours during the summer windows to add this Nations Cup. So this might be one of the last sets of sort of three match test tours that we do get to see, folks. And it was nice to have a bit of an old-fashioned one with the Maori All Blacks games as well. And yeah, we've not talked since then, so we should wind back to last Tuesday, where the Maori All Blacks lost to Ireland 24-30. I get just listening to the Harping on Rugby podcast, and they made a good point there that look, the Maori All Blacks play in a similar style to the Barbarians. They like to throw it around. They like to play from anywhere. It's kind of their style. They also don't have a lot of preparation time, let's be honest. So when they come up against an international team that is structured, 9 times out of 10, they should lose. But actually, they've got a much better record than that. But that's kind of what we saw last Tuesday, though, boys, isn't it? That the more structured, organised side that became much more cohesive after having a couple of weeks together won the day over the Maori All Blacks.
Yeah, definitely a case of we thought when the Maori scored very early, of course, Sean Stevenson, who had a very, very good game getting across early in the piece, and we thought, listen, here we go again. It's going to be a good, open, fast game. Unfortunately for the Maori, they also started making mistakes, and you hit it right on the head, Paul Ireland, just a little bit more structure involved, and they slowly but surely ground the Maori down, and I think once they got out to a reasonable lead, I think the Maori were always playing catch up, but still making those little errors on what was a damp night in the capital.
Yeah, and so look, it's great to see the Maori All Blacks back. It's great to see the Maori All Blacks back playing a Tier 1 nation as well. I think also the Maori All Blacks, you saw with selections there, we didn't have Zane Sullivan at fullback. We had TJ starting in this game. So I think it was also an element of rotating and making sure that all the players got a game as well, and that the whole squad was used. So I think there was all of that kind of stuff there. So I love Maori All Blacks. I'm glad they're back. Glad they get your games. I think they should have more. Not really too worried about the loss there, Boa. Yourself, are you happy with how that series panned out, those two games?
Yeah, no, it was good. I think, and what for me, the one big highlight is that, you know, we should get the most competitive teams in first up. There's no question about it. There's no point, you know, bringing in the island nations and just turning into an easy beat sort of competition so that we can, you know, pad our record. That has to stop. That has to stop. And what a way to start the international season down here. And also just adding to your point, I think rugby, the way the game is being policed and at times over-policed, it does suit a sort of robotic, more clinical 15-man effort. And that's, I think, what Ireland really proved on this tour. It's almost reminiscent going back to the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Wallabies and the Brumbies were dominating at a very sort of robotic style, but there's, you know, very ruthlessly efficient, you know, very good clean shapes of attack and a very structured defense. And of course, they use their kicking game very well. And this is an area I think the Irish clearly beat the All Blacks, particularly with some 50-22s. I've been harping on about 50-22s since last season when it came into effect. So these are the areas, I think, where they innovated. But once you actually break it down, it's not real innovation. What it is, it's going back to the basics, the fundamental core pillars of the game. And they do it really well. So this is an area I think the All Blacks have moved away from. And unfortunately, we just keep looking for X-factor individual brilliance. And those last couple of tests, particularly Wellington, it didn't happen often enough.
Yep. Look, some lots of chat thing asking about Ian Foster. We will get on to Ian Foster, don't worry. We'll probably spend the second half of the show talking about the All Blacks versus Ireland series and what's going to happen to Ian Foster in this first half hour. Let's wrap up for the other games as well. Also, Johan Rugby asking me, Paul, did you see how angry Eddie Jones got at the Australian who called him Tony's a traitor? Yeah, look, that kind of stuff isn't on. Look, folks, it's professional rugby. He's not a traitor. What the guy said was wrong. Now, should Eddie Jones respond like that? Probably not. But at the end of the day, unedifying all round. I didn't watch the video in detail, but it's not. Look, fans need to be fans and support rather than just being aggro. A bit of banter's fun, but that wasn't banter. So yeah, not happy with that kind of behaviour from fans. And the less we see of it, the less we highlight it, personally, the better. Put bluntly. So we'll move on from that quickly because of that. Pacific Nations Cup. Then we had two games there. Tonga losing to Australia, 22-39, and Fiji losing to Samoa 20-23. Great to see the Australia A being used, similar in the way to the Maori All Blacks, getting over there and playing those games. Boa, look, a real lesson here for Tonga, who brought back, obviously, your Charles Piatowes, your Israel Folau, etc. And it really hasn't worked for them with three losses on the bounce against Fiji, Samoa and Australia A. The game starts up front and bringing these superstar player back just hasn't worked for Tonga, has it?
No. And this comes back to what Ireland did. You know, rugby's it's a 15+8 game now. You know, you need a whole team effort. And I think, frankly speaking, I mean, I've got a lot of respect for Tota Ikefu, but he's the wrong guy to be coaching a team like Tonga. And, I had three of my boys from our premier side at Manuka Rowers playing in this Tongan side. It was just, to me, it was the wrong strategy. And they just, with a team of superstars, they just ended up nowhere. Again, what they need to do is go back to basics, do the hard graft first, get the possession, play the territorial game, do the basics right. So once you move away from that, and once you just look at the whole razzle-dazzle, the hot potato-style game, it doesn't work at Test rugby. It's a brutal lesson for Tonga to learn as well. And all in all, it did was actually kind of derail the campaign for some of the smaller clubs around Auckland particularly. It's a real honour playing for your country. Unfortunately, I did see this happening long before this team was put together. Just wrongly coached. And I guess, they might have another Ian Foster situation there in Tonga.
The reviewer says Tonga's focus is to qualify for the World Cup this week. They're up against Hong Kong and playing, I think, on the Gold Coast in Australia. Look, at the end of the day, up against Hong Kong, the greater level of athletes will win. Tonga will win this game. I think it doesn't really matter who's coaching them. They should win that game. So whilst you say they're focusing on that game and sure they need to keep players fit for that game, I don't think they needed to sort of, I don't think that should have detracted from their performances during these games. These games should have been used for cohesion and for building some momentum / morale. And that's kind of not what's happened. But I still expect them to beat Hong Kong on that one. Stephen, look, really impressive by Samoa. Obviously, Fiji, the first team to, I think it was to qualify for the Rugby World Cup, but Samoa's come through now, adding that forward pack to their team to become the top team in out of the Pacific Islands, and that's it's been a really impressive progression for them. And you've got to be smiling for them heading towards the Rugby World Cup next year.
Yeah, have to agree with that, Paul. And you know, once again, it's about continuity. If you look at a good number of that pack, that Samoan pack, they're playing up in Europe. So I think they've just probably put that groundwork in, got their structures right. And along the way, they've actually played some really, really good rugby. And at times they've been able to rope it in and play with a little bit of structure. And I thought they'd win in that first game. I mean, so that was a very surprising win over Fiji. Fiji, I think, will be a little bit disappointed, you know, knowing most of this tournament's actually been played at home. I thought they would have probably thought it was a great opportunity to take out the Pacific Nations Cup. But really, credit to Samoa. They look like a team that's definitely on the rise.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, folks, they're in a Pool D with England, Japan, Argentina, and Chile. So yeah, congratulations to Chile, who've qualified ahead of the USA. I'm looking at doing a little piece for patrons. I do it for your ears only over on the New Zealand Sport Radio Patreon page, so patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio. Having a quick look at the force world rankings and what it kind of means from this window heading into that Rugby World Cup next year. So look out for that one, folks. Also over there, I'm having a chat with Harping On Rugby, who is an Irish site, tomorrow morning, talking about what this All Blacks versus Ireland series win means for Ireland and in Ireland. So that also will be over there on the patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio. That'll be up sometime tomorrow. I'm going to skip over the New Zealand or the All Blacks Ireland games. We'll come back to that one and spend most of our time there. Australia, England, 17-21 in this one. And England gets the series. Is Eddie Jones heading towards the Rugby World Cup with strength? Or was this a game where Australia played all the rugby, having run the ball twice as much, making four times as many passes, England really struggling still to score tries, but great defence, and struggling, not really scoring many tries in this one. Yes, they can dog themselves out and get wins, but I'm still concerned for them. Boa, is that a fair reflection that Australia hindered by lots of injuries? This wasn't a true reflection, perhaps, how good they are. And England, well, I say dogging it out, but not impressing.
Absolutely. I think this win and the series win will paper over the cracks really nicely. And, you know, Eddie Jones is not exactly the most likable or liked person, as we saw. Really, that little clip which had gone viral, which I thought was absolutely disgraceful. Anyway, that's beside the point. One area I do have to highlight, and this is a concern for the Wallabies, and this is an area where England really dominated the Wallabies, was in the collision. I thought the Wallabies, again, they were going far too high. And there were some critical line breaks where you could clearly see the tackler was just getting bumped off purely because they were entering into a very high position. And the English were quite clever around who they use as ball carriers. This was one area I think they sort of dominated. And apart from that, it was just a case of, you know, just wait for the Wallabies to make a mistake, and England pounced on it, particularly their try when their first five just kind of, you know, snake right through. You know, the Wallabies had the statistical advantage. They dominated the numbers all apart from the scoreboard. So this will probably give Eddie Jones a little bit of oxygen would it be too unfair to say that it's a stay on his execution eventually, because there's been a lot of pressure, particularly back home, calling for him to moved on. But I think, it's much like a Foster situation where this away series win will probably paper over the cracks, and we'll see how he continues throughout the rest of the tests.
Yeah, in turnovers, 13 by Australia, 8 by England shows you that that's the one stat where Australia didn't win, but that probably shows you that, yeah, that they, as you say, created opportunities but then gave them up. This will probably it's getting too close now and too expensive to replace people before the Rugby World Cup. So I think, yeah, as you say, this gets Eddie Jones through to the Rugby World Cup now, because you're not going to replace him after the November games, and you're not going to sack him after winning a winning tour. So yeah, so that sees him through to the Rugby World Cup. As you say, maybe not for Foster, but I think all the Northern Hemisphere coaches will see themselves through to the Rugby World Cup now. I think the Welsh coach as well has done enough in this series to earn himself that, because he was also under pressure. They came up short against South Africa, 30-14, in that in their last test. South Africa always in front in this one, having picked their best team for this game, having sort of rotated players for the first two. A bit surprised that they lost 4 out of 10 of their scrums. South Africa there, it's not an area that you'd expect normally to be strong. So still not perfect from them by any stretch of the imagination. But a solid win, 30-14. Never looked like losing against Wales. South Africa sort of recovering from that blip, Stephen, and have blooded a lot of new players, or given a lot of players experience.
Yeah, just before I do, I was just going to touch base on that Wallabies game. I know they've got some work on, and to my way of thinking, a lot of the mistakes they made were their own doing. You know, I can think of something like Harry Wilson with a clean out from a, you know, way past the point of contact when basically they actually had momentum, and I think they killed their own momentum. What I actually did enjoy about their game, and I didn't watch the whole game, I watched it the next day, I just liked their creativity, where they were actually quite creative when you compare them, what Rennie's trying to do compared to another certain side that we'll talk about at length in a moment. At least you could actually see some creativity in their play. And I think there were some real coach killers there, but I think they've also suffered. If you think about it, I think losing somebody like Quade Cooper, just a really experienced, balanced head, from day dot, and you know, then you probably the injury to James O'Connor. I don't know. I think Lilicea will get there eventually, but he's not quite there at the moment. And I must admit, I also enjoyed Nick Frost as a guy who was in the Crusaders, Canterbury and Crusaders Academy, and it's great to see him develop and get out there. Just with regards to Wales, South Africa, I can't say I did watch it, but I think at the end of the day, fellas, that probably came down to South Africa had the luxury of obviously rolling out another side in that second test, and I think Wales have pretty much had to roll out pretty much the same side 3 weeks in a row. I think it is a little bit of a victory for the Welsh, because they've been way more competitive on this tour than what I actually thought they would be, and it's quite noticeable with South Africa. When they are in a battle, they revert to type, but that type they do very well.
Yeah, and absolutely, it's and they've got their first ever win against the Springboks in South Africa. Not their first ever win in South Africa, of course, the Rugby World Cups and stuff, but the first ever win against the Springboks there. Bella, you got a couple of comments around that series between the Boks and Wales?
I have to say, it wasn't the most inspiring series. There were moments in that series. It was maybe slightly more exciting than you guys watching me mow my lawns. It was bad, old-fashioned, pissed rugby, whatever you call that. And of course, that second test where Springboks lost, it was like watching the Springbok, the kids go out and play. All credit to them. Jacques Tinaba experimenting, blooding some new talent in there. And of course, they had the confidence to roll out their top side in the last test. It was comfortable. Wales were competitive. But again, you keep seeing some of these crazy things like Dan Bigger jumping up and trying to take someone's ears off and nothing happened. So it was, more or less the same old. And I guess there weren't enough red cards to say Wayne Pivak side this time. All in all, it wasn't the most inspiring series. I did stay up to watch two out of the three tests. I wish I hadn't, actually.
I was going to say, Bar, if you can put on food and drink when you're mowing your lawn, we'll come over and watch you mow your lawn, as long as you're not doing it at 3 o'clock in the morning, mate.
Yeah, I mean, 3 o'clock. Yeah, good on you. I'm not saying 3 o'clock in the morning wanting to watch one of those games. That's a certain. I'll be honest. Yeah, I've survived with highlights from these ones, but I was expecting Wales to get an absolute drubbing and to lose all three tests by country mile. The fact they got very close in the first test, won the second test. And sure, they lost this last one by 16 points. But the fact that they were competitive in the first two really has changed a lot of people's opinion about Wayne Pivac and where he's taking this side. So, agree with you on a lot of what you said there. I guess the only question, Boa, is do you agree with perpendicular lines, so the stripes on your lawn, so the linesman can tell offsides, or are you much more of a diamond sort of pattern person when you're cutting your grass? Because that's what we'll need to know.
Diamonds all the time, and I do have a small club cadet. And at times, when I was watching the Bok Pak walk to the breakdowns and the lineouts, I wish I was there with my club cadet, because I could have given them a bit of a ride and got them there faster, so they were up to their old tricks, no question. One thing I have to say, moment of the series for me, the picture which really stays in my mind is Gareth Anscombe coming back from a very lengthy layoff and kicking that corner flag conversion to give them that win in that second test. So I think fully deserved, and it's always nice to see a Kiwi win it for another country, as has happened on many occasions. So I just thought I'd throw that in there as well, gentlemen.
I mean, Anscombe coming back from what was a horrible knee injury. It took him out. He was out for over a year, and to see him back playing any kind of rugby on a rugby pitch is fantastic to see. Let's be honest, and somebody that I think Blues fans would have liked to have had for the past sort of 7 years as their number 10, considering how the Blues have been going. But clearly JK decided he wasn't up to scratch and told him to go away. So there we go. At least JK, during the breakdown last night, admitted that he's a bad coach, which is good to see that he's finally managed to have that sort of self-awareness around himself on that one. USA lost to Chile by 2 points, meaning they lost on aggregate by 1 point, meaning Chile goes through the Rugby World Cup. USA now off into the final qualifying competition, along with Kenya, USA, Kenya. It's probably going to be Hong Kong when they lose to Tonga, and somebody else, Portugal. There we go. I expect it to be a USA-Portugal final. We'll see about that. Obviously, if the USA do not qualify for this after they've been granted the World Cup, that would be a massive loss for them and for world rugby as well. Look, lots of positive stuff talking about the USA, Major League Rugby, et cetera, et cetera. But so we're running out of time, and two more games quickly. Uruguay beat Romania 26-20. Argentina beat Scotland 34-31 after Scotland led 13-28 just after half time. Scotland had this game won, but a try after the buzzer off a 10-meter scrum outside off their line to win this one. Stephen, I don't know if you saw this one, but you did. A heartbreak for Scotland, but some real guts showed by Argentina.
Yeah, they really, really did well too. I thought they were pretty much out of this game, and their performance actually kind of reminded me of a little bit about the All Blacks. You know, every now and again you see this individual brilliance where Scotland playing with the structure. And I think if you think back to the second test, yeah, the individual brilliance didn't come off, but the big difference this time, it actually did come off. And I thought they were rather fortunate to get the win. But as we know, rugby is an 80-minute game, or in the case of this particular game, maybe an 82-minute game. And I'll tell you what, the crowd made the biggest noise of the day when I think it was Buffelli that went over in the corner. Yep. Yeah, just great grandstand finishes, which is what we all want to see.
And Bella, you've nodding a lot there about Argentina being an individual team compared to Scotland, a more structured team. Happy with the Townsend's coaching that he's doing there?
Absolutely. I think Gregor Townsend is a fantastic coach. He's instilled some real good fundamentals in this Scottish side. And that Boffelli try, I have to say, it was quite incredible. I stayed up to watch the game. In fact, I stayed up to watch all the games. It was a 24-hour marathon session of rugby.
It's 7 a.m. You don't stay up until 7 a.m. You get up early to watch it. Jeez, wow.
Sorry, I stayed through. I beg your pardon.
Whoa.
One thing I've got to say about Argentina is they went to sleep for large parts of that game. And then all of a sudden, I think the crowd sort of woke them up. And it was almost like they got fixated on scoring a try. And that last play to get Boffelli over on that left-hand corner was fantastic movement. The catch and pass, the precision of passing was fantastic. If they can repeat that for about 30 to 40 minutes in any test match, I think they'll be very, very hard to beat. But you got to feel for Scotland. They almost pulled it out of the fire. But Argentina, to their credit, they did a bit of an all-black sort of moment there. And they themselves pulled it out of the fire. So well done to them. And I have to say, it sort of saved the Southern Hemisphere's blushes as well.
Yeah, and look, the Scotland went losing six lineouts. So if when you line out false pieces like that, the lineout to me is the most important set piece at the moment, ahead of scrums and restarts. That really they hurt themselves there, just like. Well, because moving on now to that historic test match where the All Blacks lost four of their 16, so 75% success of their lineouts. If you don't have a lineout, you don't have a platform, is my new saying. But Stephen, where do you want to start with this one? It wasn't even if they'd won all their lineouts, this was still a game that Ireland truly won. I must admit, in that second half, I was amazed that New Zealand even got within a score at one point, I think it was. But, where do you want to start with this game?
Yeah, it almost had the feeling very similar to game to when they played France. They always looked like they were behind the eight ball and had a lot of catching up to do, but just once again, not quite accurate enough. But, for the third test in a row, they got out of the blocks far too slow. And I think this Irish team is in such a confident mood at the moment. I think getting across the whitewash early just put them in good stead. And I think if there was doubt within the All Blacks, I think it just rifled its way through the whole team. And I suspect a lot of panic set in that first half. And I think that could just be seen with the amount of mistakes that they were making. Some of them were pretty basic errors. I mean, it's a lot of credit to Ireland with their rush defence. But for anybody who was a hard-out All Black supporter who was waiting for a response to what happened in the second test, it just didn't come in that first half.
No, and that led to, I think, was it a 17-point deficit at halftime, which is the largest ever deficit at halftime that the All Blacks have had. This is, I mean, just rattle off a few records that were broken. This is only the third country to beat the All Blacks in New Zealand in a three-test series, the Wallabies and the Springboks, the other two teams that have done it. British and Irish Lions have as well. Sorry, other countries. British and Irish Lions have as well. France have won a series here, but that was only two tests before anyone starts trying to pick me up on corrections corner. Obviously, over 100 years of playing games between these two teams, Ireland never won a test here. The first lost series since 96, I think it was. I'm not sure how many more negative from an All Blacks point of view.
I was about to say, I can add one more to that. They've beaten the All Blacks three times in a calendar year, Paul. Thank God we're not playing the Irish again in an end-of-season tour again, because they'll probably get beaten again. Absolutely crazy. And there's probably not many teams in world rugby that can actually say that. That's just what makes it so, so amazing. Like, I'm sort of... curious to see how Ireland rock on, and we should give them credit before we dissect the All Blacks. They have just been absolutely amazing, and you could almost basically say that maybe that first test was a little bit of an aberration, that they had only just got off the plane. I mean to say, even if you think back to that first test and what their coach basically said, Andy Farrell said, he said, I was disappointed that we fell away from our structure. So that might have been just the case that a lot of these guys hadn't played for several weeks and then basically didn't quite hit the ground running. But the amazing thing is how they found their mojo within not just a week, but 2 weeks. They took it to another level again. So they certainly put in some big punches, to use a boxing terminology, in that first 40.
Yeah, and I guess, and Boa, the only time the All Blacks were really up was when Sexton was off the pitch, when he got concussed in that first test. He was around for the second two. Now, whether he should have been or not after that, after failing that HIA and getting taken off in the first test, is a different issue, and we'll come on to that. But yeah, I mean,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for, but you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So we should talk about the Ireland. So, Boa, wonderful team, lots of cohesion, know what each other's doing, got depth in every position apart from perhaps 10. You've got to have enjoyed what Ireland brought to these games.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I think it was a coaching masterclass. Some of their attack shapes, the way they bent the All Black first up defense line was terrific. They used a lot of variations versus All Blacks, didn't? One thing I have to say is, right from the get-go, when the tour was announced, when the venues were announced, as soon as I saw Wellington, I knew straight away this was going to be a disaster, because Wellington is a cold, wet, miserable, windy joint. Forget the rugby or the venue. It's just, it hasn't served New Zealand and the All Blacks well at all. Because if you recall, Sonny Bill Williams, getting a red card in the Lions tour, the two draws where we just got out of jail, then that ridiculous pass Jordy Barrett threw where I think it was Willie LaRue hit an intercept and we lost to the box. So, you know, it's been a messy, messy sort of venue, and we haven't had a good time over there. So as soon as I saw the announcement, I knew this wasn't going to end well. And of course, that as far as Ireland focusing on what they did, we just got beaten up, particularly in the department where they were kicking out a hand. We just got turned around. And also, it just looked like after the first test, we sort of lost our commitment. We just didn't win those key moments, even though, we didn't have too much creativity in our attack. We just got out-passioned at home. And this is why this is such an alarming drift in form. But at the same time, it's good to find this out 1 year out from the World Cup as opposed to next year. So all credit to Ireland, thoroughly out-coached, thoroughly out-passioned us. And I just hope that headquarters don't ever play another game in Wellington so that we can avoid these sort of disasters. But that's me purely talking as a statistician.
Please join us on Wednesday evening when Richie will give a heartened defence to Wellington and what a wonderful place it is. He's already in the live chat telling us off and saying it's beautiful. And it's wonderful on a good day, once every 10 years. So he will do join the standoff show on which is our rugby league show on Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. where he'll give a full rebuttal to Boa's opinion as to Wellington.
I'm just superstitious about Ireland now. Forget the venue. Whenever we play Ireland, there's probably a good chance they're going to knock us over. It's as simple as that.
To counter that, Stephen, I am not, because I am very confident in a World Cup year, if we play Ireland, it's going to be a complete reversal, because that is what the statistical pattern says. So there you go.
Wow. So, okay. So Boa, big there on what, because this, look, let's be honest, folks. This is lining up to being it's a 50-50 whether the All Blacks will play Ireland in the quarterfinals at the Rugby World Cup next year. So, Boa. So, congratulations, Ireland. You're wonderful and you're great. We're a New Zealand podcast. It's now time for us to get negative and put the knife in, or put the double, actually, perhaps put the double handed broad great sword in, never mind knife, into New Zealand rugby. But before we go there, Boa, as the statistician who's happy with the All Blacks playing Ireland next year in a Rugby World Cup year, would you be happy with the All Blacks playing Ireland in a quarterfinal at the Rugby World Cup with Ian Foster still as head coach?
No. So the variable there and the hypothesis is that Ian Foster plays no part in this All Blacks setup. Very happy for Ireland to play the All Blacks in a quarterfinal, provided that Ian Foster is not in charge. If that's the case, I'm very comfortable. I think Ireland are going home based on the statistics, not based on the form line we're seeing from last weekend, based on the statistical pattern at World Cups.
We're being asked to rate where we think Ian Foster is as a coach. Is he better than Eddie Jones, Andy Farrell, or even Jamie Joseph? And the answer to that is no, no, and no. Or Galtier. No, he's not at the moment. The big difference between Ireland and New Zealand, and I'm going to disagree with Boa about kind of the kind of wanting it in passion, was Ireland played as a team and had attacking shapes. New Zealand had no attacking shapes and relied on individual brilliance to score tries. And that's where those tries came from. I mean, we had that one where it was Lualala tapped the ball up and Bowden Barrett takes it on the hoof and goes and scores. And if you've got no attacking shape, if you come across a good defence, and you're relying on individual brilliance, you're not going to score many tries. And that's the massive difference. And at the end of the day, you can have everything else, but that one thing will just do you in. So clearly, Ian Foster, whoever's in charge of the attack, is not doing a good enough job, full stop. I'm seeing a lot of people talking about Joe Smith getting involved, because he was involved, obviously, with the first test match when all the other coaches were out with COVID. Now, Joe Smith is joining as a selector. The reason for that is he does not want to travel. He made this very clear when he left the Ireland job that, look, he has got family commitments and issues that he does not want to travel. Now, as an All Blacks coach, assistant or head coach, you have to travel a lot away from home. But as a selector, you can do that from home or nearby, helping out with the Blues. You can do that from home or nearby. But you can't do that as part of the All Blacks coaching setup. So no, Joe Smith will not be part of the All Blacks coaching setup whatever iteration it has next, because of that, because of his personal family commitments. And I totally respect him for that. I think it's entirely the right decision for him. So all those people asking that and putting pressure or expectation around that, please don't, because I don't think it's fair on the fella to do that. But there we go. We've been told by Boa that he clearly wants Ian Foster out, because he said that that he's the variable that has to be removed. Stephen, where do you sit on this? Should Ian Foster stay and be given the opportunity to grow from this? Is there a long-term plan to the Rugby World Cup that he's putting in that hasn't just come to fruition? Where are you on this one?
Oh, listen, what concerns me, we're not seeing anything. I heard a very good a very, very good piece on the radio today, where an Irish journalist met with the Irish team in the dressing room, and a lot of the players basically said to him that they were really surprised what the All Blacks didn't bring to the game. They actually expected innovation. They expected something different, but they were surprised what the All Blacks actually brought to the table, which was not a hell of a lot. And I've got to agree with Bob. I think Foster's got to go. I mean, so I'm quite happy if they put in an interim coach at the moment. I'm not too fussed who it is. You've obviously given some reasons why Joe Schmidt can't travel, but I actually just think it needs a change. It needs a freshen up. It needs a different look. Obviously, they're going to be looking for a new selector, because from what I believe, that was Grant Fox's last test as a selector.
The replacement is Joe Smith. Joe Smith's replacing Grant Fox.
The replacement is Joe Smith. I kind of like that. You know, it may require a new set of eyes, but more importantly, I think this All Black squad does need freshening up. I think it needs some new heads brought into the squad. You know, once again, a lot of people saying, "Oh, there's not a lot of cattle around." How do we know that? You know, sometimes you'll actually be surprised. Some players, if given the opportunity, are just so hungry to get in there. There's a little bit of mindset as well. Obviously, you know, I spoke to a former All Black today, and he said there's also a mindset that goes with that as well. But for me, to answer your question, I think you've got to move Ian Foster on altogether, because to me, just watching some of the images, he just looks like a broken guy. And I also believe they need a change of captaincy as well.
Now, before anyone get the wrong idea, saying someone isn't up to coaching international rugby does not mean that the guy that he's not a nice guy or is not a good person. From all accounts, Foster is a good person and a nice guy. Now, look, he is not charismatic. He does not come over well in the media, and he is part. And to me, he's part of that old boys New Zealand rugby network where they all believe that the media is the enemy. And I think that comes across in how he approaches and deals with the media. Now, this weekend, we should probably just touch on this, is that in the post-match interviews with the print and radio media, he said, "Look, I only want to talk about the game now. I don't want to talk about my future." And after the game, to me, I get that, I understand that, and it doesn't distract away from what Ireland achieved. So I think that was perhaps the right call at the time, knowing that there was going to be a media conference the next day in the hotel. Now, it required the media manager to step in and stop to enforce that, but I didn't have a problem with that per se. What I did have a problem with then is, if you're going to do that, you have to host that media conference you've arranged on Sunday. You can't then cancel it and not have it happen. Now, apparently Ian Foster said as he was leaving, walking out to the coach, "I don't know why it's cancelled," and it was taken out of his hands. I think that this shows, I think, part of the institutional problem that there is with New Zealand rugby, in that they circled the wagons and found a way to sort of not talk about this, thinking that it wouldn't take, that would sort of dampen down the sort of media noise around Ian Foster's future. Whilst they did their review and all that kind of stuff, that apparently started today at 10:30. Now, that's not how you communicate with fans. That's not how you engage people on that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think Ian Foster, from what I say, I think Ian Foster is genuinely a decent guy, but doesn't come across well. I think he should go. I don't think he should stick around. That does leave a problem as to who goes in. I'm not quite sure where I was going with all that talk, but so what I'll do is I'll just throw it straight over to Bo.
Yes,
and go,
are you giving a
5-year contract to Razor, or are you getting interim coach?
Look, it's pretty simple. So I'm going to get a bit corporate talky now with HR. You hire slowly, you fire real quickly. It's pretty simple. It doesn't matter what level of job it is. You fire real quick when results aren't delivered. You got to look out your backyard. It's unacceptable what has happened. And, you know, it's everyone's been very critical of it. And same goes to the captain as well. I think we need you know, we need a complete change of scenery and change of leadership. Because on the, Wellington, you never see any much leadership anyways. And, you know, it transferred itself onto the field where the All Blacks are playing as well. And I think as far as the hire, well, I mean, this whole song and dance around Scott Robertson, he's been auditioning for this job for the last how many years? So to me, it's a very straight, simple fix. And look, with this group of players, we don't need to make too many tweaks. It's just it's a mental thing. The rugby is there, and if you looked at the first test, particularly in the break at the breakdown and the collision, we absolutely smashed Ireland. So the point I'm trying to make is it's just a mindset thing here, guys. It's a very simple change, a very simple fix. We just need someone who's a bit creative, who's a bit adventurous, who can bring back that flair and that pride in the style of our play, particularly around the counter-attack, because on the last test, there were many opportunities where Ireland actually kicked the ball back to us, but we just ran out of ideas on how to counter-attack, you know? So for me, it's pretty simple. Foster, heck of a nice guy. Fozzie Bear, you know, lovely guy. Funny enough, their coaching announcements was made at my home club, Manukau Rovers, and I remember, you know, they spent a heck of a lot of time hanging out with some of our junior players, and, you know, they're lovely people. But you have to understand, this is the professional game. This is where people have to man up. They get criticized for everything they do. You have to take the good with the bad. And, you know, they didn't really help themselves cancelling the Sunday press conference. And, of course, you know, trying to say, look, I don't want to talk about it. It just didn't help himself. And Steve, bang on the money, very uninspiring. But that's just him. That's just him. And some people are just not cut out to be a head coach. And in this game, being an assistant coach is probably the safest place, because when things go horribly wrong, your neck is under the guillotine.
I think Bo's made some good points there around mindset, Stephen, because I think there's kind of two things that essentially an international coach has got to get right. One is selection, and the other one is around motivating the players to play your game plan. Basic skills should be there, all that kind of stuff. Now, and from a selection point of view, there's the odd question around one or two players. Should Sam Sonia have been dropped this test? Should you put RTS in? But on the whole, it's not like he's got like majorly got that wrong, is it? I mean, the players are essentially right, given one or two tweaks. It is just down to that motivational side of things, Stephen.
You know, I think a really good coach has got to have an ability to know how to profile a player with a specific skill set to play in a specific position. And of course, one of the criticisms is the amount of chop and changing that we've seen with this side. And in specific positions, you need really, really smart people to implement your game plans. If you look at Ireland at the moment, their key man is Sexton. Wow, everything revolves around Sexton, but not to the point where he can go off the field. His replacement, Joey Carberry, can still come on and do the job. And you know, you look in their forward pack, each loose forward is a specialist. You've got the open side Franca De Flyer, is it? He's an amazing flank. He's probably close to the best seven in the world at the moment. Yeah, Caelan Doris at number eight, Peter Mahoney, who's a six. Always seen him as a six. So all of a sudden you've got pace, guys in their positions doing their respective jobs. So you've immediately got that trust if you've got those guys in there all the time. For me, we've still got guys playing out of position. Rico Ioane, for me, you know, if you think about it, even Foster, by his own admission in an interview, didn't believe that Rico Ioane was a centre. And with the greatest of respect, having watched Rico at super level, he still hasn't done enough for me to own that midfield position. You know, you can see it with certain players, certain midfielders. Samu Karevi from Australia is taking ownership of that second five position. Even though Bundy Aki doesn't have top-end pace, he takes ownership of that particular position. And, you know, for me, that comes with the confidence of in your coach and in selection and game plan. All those three real important.
Yeah, and then look, and just adding to Steve's point, look, it's pretty simple as far as selections go. Pick the right people don't pick out of place. Pick on the numbers, pick on performance and form line. For a talent pool as deep as New Zealand, there's really no need to play people out of position. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. And of course, you know, we can't be constantly tinkering this close to a World Cup, you know. It just goes against all the fundamentals in high performance and elite level coaching. And this is where I think someone like Foster really falls off the pace. And this is why we need a bit of freshening up. We have the players. We have the players. We have the manpower. We just need what I would call 2 millimeters of changes up here. It's just on how we, you know, we need to be adventurous. We need to try new things. And if we are to fail, we need to fail forward. What actually happened in this series, particularly the last two tests, when we fail backwards. And that's a real hammer blow, more so psychologically.
Paul, I want to give you a quick example of the profiling I'm talking about. Like for me, I personally think the two best All Black locks, if they were given the opportunity to play in a combination, are actually Scott Barrett and Sam Whitelock, despite Barrett being a sort of reasonable success in that sixth jersey. For me, I would be bringing in a specialist line-out jumper who's not just good on his own ball, but on other teams' ball. So for me, Callum Grace, if you come back to what Boa says, wins all the stats. Again, he was the best in Super Rugby on line-out ball. You saw the masterclass that battery of locks did against the Blues in the final. I personally think we've got to have Artie Savea as a specialist seven. That's where he's at his best, disruptive at breakdown. He's basically doing the job of an 8, 7 and a 6 at the moment. But I want him to focus on the number 7 side. The number 8, I haven't quite worked that out at the moment. If I was totally honest, the closest I've seen to a player who could turn into a world-class number 8 is actually Hosking Satutu, because I just think he has a skill set that he can basically pass from the back of the scrum. He's the sort of guy that can basically do a halfback's job. Aaron Smith can go to the right. He can throw a 20-meter pass to the left. So for me, that would be my loose forward. And that's just based on profiling players moving forward. I don't think enough of that has been done by the selection group.
And I think that's kind of been talked about in the live chat here. So Luxon writes, preconceived ideas, the type of player they want is hindering the team. We go back up to Tim Kay, who said, look, Hansen, etc., always had the attitude that they knew things that the media couldn't, so they were always right. Aki and Lowe's success indicates that was quite wrong. And I think there's definitely been an attitude with Hansen and also with Foster that for this to and should make themselves available for All Black selection ahead of everything else. And unfortunately, look, that's not the reality. People have got lives, families to look after. We shouldn't be criticizing players such as Bundi Aki was for heading overseas if they're not getting a look in at the moment just because you want to use them in 3 or 4 years' time. They're not going to wait around for that. They can't wait around for that. Their lives have got to move on. Luatua, also at Bristol, the Lucy, who they also had earmarked as someone they thought could be a six as well. There's a number of players that they've treated like that, and that's another part of this attitude problem that I think there is amongst this amongst New Zealand rugby. It's not just an Ian Foster or just a head coach current coach thing.
Paul, one thing I just want to add is, as far as selections go, look, you know, end of the day, numbers don't lie. And for me, numbers, statistics, it's like picking horses for courses. You know, you got to get the right personnel, pick on form. It's pretty simple. And then you've just got to manage that workload and make sure the form line is progressive as opposed to regressive. What's actually happened here is we picked from some misconceived formula, and as opposed to being progressive form lines, everyone has regressed. So that is one key diagnostic we need to address, and that's something we've been talking about. And of course, goal kicking. This is an area, you know, we seem to neglect time and again. I think given that we are finding it difficult to score tries, we then have to go to the next best thing, build pressure, make sure we get those penalties and take the points. You know, this is test match rugby. I've been going on and on about this at almost all levels. You've got to have a specialist goal kicker who can actually kick goals and get points. And the best example I give you is with Ireland. Whenever they got the opportunity, they took the points. And I actually looked at the clock. On average, it took about 91 seconds out of the game. So that's 91 seconds. You don't have to play live ball in play. So to me, this is you know, smart rugby. You've got to take your basic options right. As far as team selection goes, make sure we get specialists in position. And hopefully this whole situation with Joe Schmidt coming on board is going to fix that. But we'll wait and see. We shall wait and see.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was a big body at 12. Thomas Manger Jensen needed to be introduced to fight with Tapia. Look, I think there needs to be a big body somewhere in that back line. It doesn't have to be at 12. But none of the players there are people who you can give it to and they'll get you over the game line in the same way that Bundiaki would, in the same way that Karevic does, same way that Delandi does for South Africa. So, yep, agreed, there should be a big body. It doesn't have to be at 12, though, because if Scotland have got the South African wing up, I've gone blank as to Van der Merwe, he can come in and take it off at first receiver if needed. You just need somebody there who can do it. The All Blacks don't have anybody at the moment. Some questions about the timing of when Foster goes. Look, if Foster doesn't go now or within the next 5 days, i.e. this week, then he has to stay to the Rugby World Cup. It has to be this week. This is the it has to be now or never, basically. This is the time to do it. Otherwise, there's not enough time. Sorry, Stephen, you're shaking your head there.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wonder what sort of headspace he's in the moment. You know, he must be having self-doubt as well. And I mean that respectfully. I was really hoping that he might make the right decision on his own. Where I do really feel sorry for Ian Foster, when I read that email yesterday from the New Zealand Rugby Union, man, had they thrown him on the bus, they virtually ghosted him, if that's what they've done. If they've cancelled the press conference and he didn't know about it, and then all of a sudden they've thrown that out there, how do you reckon he's feeling at this very moment? Boy, because I'd hardly want to carry on coaching if it was me, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, Boa said it before, corporates don't muck around. They will basically cut somebody very, very quickly, and I just think it needs an injection of something.
Scotty Simpson did an article a jokey letter that's written that's basically an article for the spin-off. And in that, he basically goes about how New Zealand Rugby has burnt all the relationships over the last few years. And you're kind of like, well, look, the problem is, the base of the problem of this is that New Zealand does not have good corporate leaders. New Zealand Rugby, does not have good corporate leaders at the top. They've got people there who have been antagonistic towards their partners. Brett Impey, for example, Mark Richardson now, who's in there, who doesn't really have the experience of leading an org, doesn't have any experience of leading an organization of this size or media magnitude. As you say, JK said the same thing that on the breakdown last night, that he felt that Ian Foster had been thrown under the bus with that statement. You don't do there is a lack of leadership at the top there that makes they try to run by a committee consensus of old boys in blazers, and that's not how you run a corporation at the end of the day.
Yeah, and look, this reinforces the age-old statement, and it's so true in coaching. Quitting isn't quite the same as quitting whilst on top. So I'll say it again. Yep. Quitting isn't quite the same as quitting whilst on top. So for Ian Foster, this is probably the lowest of lows. Yeah, I feel really bad for him because that's a heck of a nice guy. Very, very likable. He's the sort of guy, you know, you want to hang out and just talk nonsense with him. You know, he's such a mellow, easygoing guy. But unfortunately, in the eyes of pretty much everyone, You know, he's very uninspiring, and his style of coaching does not bode well in this TikTok era, particularly because, you know, you need people who are charismatic and who need to be able to inspire people just like that. So I think, I hope he does the right thing, and for his sake and for his well-being as well, because his well-being thing is being brandished quite heavily, particularly at headquarters. At the moment, I'm actually not seeing that. Hire slowly, fire quickly.
Yeah, I feel like we're going round in circles now, boys. I'm not sure that there's anything more around this. I think we're all in agreement that that he has to go. From as far as replacements go, look, Razor is clearly the guy to go in there. If I was him, though, I'd demand a five-year contract. Don't expect me to turn this around and win the next Rugby World Cup. I need longer than that. So you've got to give me to the second Rugby World Cup in 5 years' time. That would be my approach. Now, if they say no to that, then that leaves them in a tough place. Of either you keep Foster or you put in an interim guy, because if you don't put Razor in if Razor isn't the head coach of the first test in 2024, then the New Zealand public are going to hate New Zealand rugby. They're particularly fans of them at the moment. Look, they love the All Blacks. They're not so keen on the people who organise and run the All Blacks. Is what I mean there. So don't get me that hate the All Blacks. They still support the All Blacks, but they just wouldn't like New Zealand rugby. So it's going to be interesting to see how that politics pans out. Don't forget, folks, I'm talking with Harping on Rugby podcast tomorrow morning. Is Burrow available? Yes, but not at a price that New Zealand Rugby could afford, even with Silver Lake money. Maybe with Silver Lake money, Burrow is available now. That's we'll see.
Like I said before, I struggle with my safe tackle framework to get it across the line for my trademark. So I think I'm way out of luck on this one.
That was said in private, though. That wasn't said in public previously.
Paul, just a quick thing, because something that we've got to discuss is, you know, from what I believe, a squad for the Rugby Championship is going to be named on Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to sort of... Obviously, they're not going to have Brodie Retallick for the Rugby Championship. Is what's the status on Scott Barrett?
I think that was an ankle or that kind of thing. So I think he could be back, but whether he's back in time for the South Africa tour, I don't know. But Patrick Tupilotu would be available back for that. I'm not sure. I think Josh Lord is out for the season. Is that right?
Yes,
from memory.
Yes,
so Evans from the Maori All Blacks, I would expect to come in. I think he was being held. I think that's the only reason he wasn't named, but I could be wrong.
Well, Scott Barrett will be fine. I think he'll be cleared and declared fit upon a fitness test. I just hope that we have a new captain and coach named for the championship. Pretty simple.
Yeah. I think that's probably all I asked for as well.
Mm. Yep. People are suggesting Gatland. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen or work as an interim one. As I say, Joe Smith, I don't think will work either. I don't think will work either. There is only really one true option. Jones wouldn't be a bad one, but everyone else is pretty much contracted elsewhere.
Just to interject, I think, look, we need younger coaches. We need more adventurous coaches with this group of guys. And even for guys like Scotty, they know, Razor knows that he has only a finite time to be able to deliver at the same level he is currently doing. So his peak will come over the next 5 to 7 years. And that's just how it is, you know. All coaches, particularly at elite level, in the modern day, they have a very limited lifespan. Their shelf life expires very quickly. And unfortunately, this is one of the aspects headquarters haven't identified. This is something Ireland, the Rugby Union Ireland, have actually identified. And if you look at some of their coaching staff, they are building towards that peak. Although the statistical form line suggests that on the World Cup year, that's not the case. But, you know, that's just how it is in the modern game, because you're dealing with younger athletes who get motivated for slightly different variety of reasons. So that needs to be kept in focus. And we need a bit of, you know, freshening up of ideas.
If there were three or four players
already that Scott Robbins, the Razors, break dancing is on the downhill slope. So yeah, I guess his coaching is will follow soon afterwards. Sorry, Steve.
I was going to say if there are three or four players that you were going to bring into the squad. Like for me, I'd love to see the Canterbury Tighthead prop Newell come in. I'd love to see Callum Grace brought into the squad. I think they'll obviously have to replace Brody Retallick. So I'd like to see Josh Dixon actually come into the squad as well. And listen, I don't really know where we're going with Carl Tuinukuiafi. So I'd like to see Ethan de Groot come back into the squad. And those are four changes I'd definitely like to see. I'm not too sure what the status on Damian McKenzie is at the moment, but I would imagine if he's available, he'll probably come back into the squad.
He's got to play one NPC game first before being allowed back into the squad is the kind of theory. Same for Patrick Tupolotu, unless exceptions are made. Now, exception was made for Patrick because of the number of lock injuries. But DMAC, as far as I'm aware, is fit and running around and raring to go. He just has to play one NPC game first. Edward Boyd Tamati suggests, how about O'Gara? Look, he is one of the young up-and-coming coaches that will be coaching a top international side in the not-too-distant future. But again, I don't think New Zealand Rugby could afford the break clause on his La Rochelle contract. On that one, to be honest with you. Right. Anyway, folks, let's wrap it up there. I'm going to leave it on a light note that I bet you will not have another weekend where you see two international rugby games where someone hits the crossbar challenge with a penalty. We also had a penalty hit a post as well. So lots of kicks hitting posts this weekend. And thank you, everyone who's joined us live. Don't forget, we're back at 8 p.m. on Monday for the Driving Moore show, and hopefully we'll be able to announce or be able to discuss who the new All Blacks head coach is at that time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.